540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Deborah Rodriguez. We begin in Georgia, where we've just learned a special grand jury that recommended charging former President Trump and 18 others with trying to change the 2020 election results actually recommended a total of 39 people be charged. Among them, Senator Lindsey Graham, former Georgia Senators Kelly Loeffler and David Perdue, as well as former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn. CBS News legal contributor Jessica Levinson on District Attorney Fonnie Willis' decision.
What I take away from it is really why she decided to charge this case as a large criminal enterprise, because you see a lot of people involved and maybe not always involved in the same actions, but it comes down to the same purpose, and that purpose is to try and overturn the election.
The final report shows there was only one vote against recommending Mr. Trump be charged. An international team of rescuers has reached an American explorer who's been stuck in a cave more than 3,000 feet below the entrance in southern Turkey's Taurus Mountains after he got sick last Saturday. They say he's recovered enough to start moving him out. But Carl Heitmeier, a friend and fellow cave rescuer in New Jersey, says it won't be easy.
They're going to have tight spots. They're going to have restrictions. They're going to have belly crawls. It's cold. The water is 40 degrees Fahrenheit, and you're going to get wet.
The warning's gone out to Texans to ease up on electricity, but it's not so easy considering the sweltering heat wave there. Correspondent Omar Villafranca is in the thick of it.
Here in Texas, all eyes will be on the state's power grid. They've been asking customers to conserve power during the hottest part of the day to avoid outages. But that's going to be a challenge since temperatures are expected to reach 107, 108 here in Dallas.
President Biden has arrived in India for the G20 summit. National security expert Jamil Jafur tells CBS News.
We'll expect a lot of discussions about trade, global commerce, certainly climate, which has been an issue at many of the G20 summits in the recent past will come up. And then, of course, technology issues and cooperation and competition, particularly with China and Russia, both of whose leaders will not be there.
New trouble for the head of soccer in Spain.
Prosecutors have just filed a formal complaint with Spain's high court accusing suspended soccer federation president Luis Rubiales of sexual assault and coercion. He continues to insist the kiss he planted on the lips of World Cup player Jenny Hermoso was consensual. She has filed a legal complaint against him, and now Rubiales could face a criminal trial. Vicky Barker, CBS News, London.
The Dow is up 83 points. S&P ahead 14. This is CBS News.
You need to hire fast and hire right? You need Indeed. Their all-in-one hiring platform helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates efficiently. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. We are your hometown radio, refreshed.
With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. Waukesha Mayor Sean Riley and Milwaukee Mayor Cavalier Johnson raised glasses yesterday to celebrate the realization of a 20-year-long, $300 million water project.
To the healthy, clean water for Waukesha for generations, and to Milwaukee Water Works, which we'll be drinking. Cheers.
Cheers.
A transition from groundwater to freshwater sourced from Lake Michigan via Milwaukee is anticipated to take about 5 days to complete, with that process starting next week. The bronze faucet has been fixed. City maintenance crews in Milwaukee say they've successfully removed a black substance from the statue located along Milwaukee's Riverwalk. It appears someone had coated the faucet with black latex paint. The cleaning process took about 6 hours to complete. With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles.
Experience Nightlight, September 8th and 9th from 5 until 10:30 p.m. Presented by Joy Engine. The dazzling spectacle is an immersive 4D light festival taking place in Milwaukee's historic Mitchell Street neighborhood. Digital animations, dance, music, art, and fashion combine to create a visual, family-friendly sensory experience outside of 710 West Historic Mitchell Street, home of Mitchell Street Arts. The event is family-friendly and free to the public. Don't miss this iconic event. Nightlight, where art comes to life. Information at joyengine.org.
Folks, I tell you this much, the Cripes Cast is just the butter on my cheese.
Cockroaches, not that bad. They call them palmetto bugs in South Carolina. Same thing you can call them up here.
Are they really palmetto bugs?
And they're a great source of protein. They're the lobsters of the future.
They also got salmonella, and they can lay like 40 eggs at once.
Well, they gotta work out a few kinks there, okay? They gotta work out a few kinks.
Cripes Cast every Saturday and Sunday at noon across Civic Media and on the Civic Media app.
If I could be you.
And you could be me.
For just 1 hour.
If you could find a way.
To get inside.
Each other's mind.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out. And for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
You are never far away from your favorite local radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app, and we invite you to get social with us by following our network's Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook pages. Want even more? CivicMedia.us.
Flatbread, unless there's goat cheese on it. Pine nuts.
Wow, someone went to private school. They knocked down the original building, which was just a building, and then they built an actual castle, and it is gorgeous. Every time a friend of mine from out of town comes, I take him there because I'm that much of a podunk hick.
Ooh, I like this one.
This is The Prodigy.
The Prodigy. Okay. Yeah. Gene, how do you rate this one?
Oh, I'm having a ball.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time, this is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin!
Hello, Wisconsin. Welcome to the 11 o'clock hour of As Goes Wisconsin. I am your host, Kristen Bry, along with Greg Bach on the board, and I am recording live from Madison today, my hometown. Always fun to be here in the Civic Media headquarters. And what I noticed as I was driving to the studio this morning from the west side, driving down to State Street through campus, is that the kids are back. And so lots of kids I shouldn't call them kids, young adults, students, UW-Madison students walking, going to class. They're here. And it made me think, it's always been fun when growing up in Madison and having all the students be back. But it also was topical for our talk today with our next guest, because last month I read an article from Washington Post that had this headline: Professors have a summer assignment, prevent ChatGPT chaos in the fall. And I was curious to talk to someone who is not only just a professor, but also knows a thing or two about AI and the ethics behind it. And so I'm so excited to talk to our next guest, Professor David Williamson Schaefer, who is a data philosopher, a quantitative ethnographer, and the Sears Bascom Professor of Learning Analytics and Educational Psychology at UW-Madison's School of Education. So I feel like you are poised to be an expert on the ethics of ChatGPT and how it's being used in college.
Well, I'm happy to pretend to be an expert anyway.
There we go. So I guess the first question is, I think just blatantly, is that headline accurate? Was there kind of a feeling over the summer of this is going to be a school year where it's the Wild West of how students are using generative AI?
Yeah, I think actually the term Wild West is kind of perfect. For those of us old enough to remember, say, when the internet first came out and the World Wide Web in the early 1990s, or video games started to be a big thing in the late 2000s. Nobody's quite sure exactly what it is that they should be doing. And so there's a lot of experimentation and a lot of worry. And I think also in some places, a lot of excitement.
So is it, at least in your experience with UW-Madison, has there been much instruction or guidance given from an administration level of like, this is how we are deciding to do this? Or is it kind of each professor deciding how they want to monitor it, use it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not aware that we've received a whole lot of specific guidance. There are definitely universities that have been much more centralized in the way that they're thinking about how to respond to AI. But UW-Madison, I think, has a long and strong tradition of independence and broad thinking. And so there hasn't really been a central mandate yet. And I think the same thing is true, at least for the schools in Madison. And as far as I know, the schools across the state, there's really been no kind of central guidance about what to do or not to do.
Which is funny, because I feel like that's kind of been how where we are with government, as far as what are we doing with AI? What are we doing ahead of the election? And there's been lots of talk of we should do something. We should start to figure out the rules and how we play with this. But no one's really taken the first step to, I guess, draft what that looks like, at least that I'm aware of.
Yeah, well, I think part of it is that where people are still experimenting to find out what AI can and can't do. And I think we're even still at the stage where not everybody's sure what we actually mean by AI or yeah. What's new or why it is that we're talking so much about it.
So for your experience, what are the risks of students, like, I guess, what's the useful way students could be using generative AI that enhances work versus replaces work? Because I think that's the fear, yeah. Right? It becomes you just use ChatGPT to write a paper or to do your work for you. And is that a legitimate fear, or is it more stuff that could be a starting place for students?
Well, I think it's both. I mean, one thing that's really important is to understand what we're talking about when we talk about ChatGPT. So ChatGPT is what's called a large language model. And literally what that means is that a company, in this case, OpenAI, has spent a ton of money scraping everything it can, legally or not, from the internet, and then using that to construct a giant database that tells it, given some set of words, what's the next most likely word to come? So it's literally just, if you think about autocomplete, when you type in like in Gmail or sometimes in Word, right? It's just doing that on a massive scale. It's like a giant autocomplete engine. And the way I think about it is it's sort of like when you ask it questions, it's sort of like an undergraduate who skimmed the reading and is trying to fake their way through the class discussion. And so, first of all, let's just be clear. It's truly amazing that we've been able to build a tool that can do as well as an undergraduate who has skimmed the reading and is faking their way through the discussion. That's incredible. But it means that it has some things that you can do with it and some things that it probably won't do well. The way I think about it is, as educators, there's sort of six responses that we can have to these new tools. We could ignore it. Mm-hmm. We could ban it. We can try and outfox it. We can teach about it. We can actually teach it, or we can teach with it. I think the first two of those, ignoring it and banning it, are sort of either like, you know, putting your head in the sand and just pretending that something's not there, or worse, trying to stuff everybody else's head in the sand and try and pretend that it's not there. All of the last four are viable options. I think the most exciting one, of course, is to teach with it. Mm-hmm. Right? So outfoxing it is essentially to reconstruct your assignments and the things that you do so that they're things that AI can't do. And an easy way to do that is to ask AI to do the assignments that you've assigned. And if it does a good job, well, then you probably need to fix it. There are some people who are teaching about AI. So they're talking about what the ethical concerns, and there are many of them, of using AI are, how it works, what it can do. There's some people who focus on actually having students build their own AI tools in a subject. And then the last one, which I think is the most exciting, is figuring out ways to incorporate AI into what students are doing. So, for example, have AI write an essay and have students critique it. Have AI give students feedback on an essay and then have them respond to it. Have students have a discussion with AI and then come together and talk about what the AI knew about a topic or didn't know about a topic. And there are teachers who are coming up with more and more creative things to do like that. But that's sort of the range of possibilities that are out there.
And that actually, the last one sounds fascinating to me, because I think about it, because so many headlines over the last 9 months, let's say, from when ChatGPT first came out, is all of these jobs now that are the like ChatGPT whisperer type jobs of knowing how to work with this tool, because so many companies are so hungry to be able to leverage it. And so the last option that you just said seems, as far as like teaching with it, is actually the biggest opportunity of not only still using, still teaching critical thinking and the subject at hand while not fighting against this thing that feels kind of inevitable?
Yeah, there's a professor at Harvard's business school who said that ChatGPT isn't going to replace people's jobs. What's going to happen is that people working with AI are going to replace people who are working without AI.
Yeah.
I think certainly that's the way the future's headed. I do want to caution us a little bit. You know, when the World Wide Web first came out, or when, you know, Google search first came out, which was, by the way, seemed at the time kind of as amazing as ChatGPT does now. I mean, it was like a miracle that you could search everything that was on the web and come back with, you know, something that was pretty close to what you were looking for. There were actually a lot of people who were talking about how important it was going to be to train students to make good search queries, right? And then there was discussion about, like, you know, I was studying, do students have smart search strategies? And it turns out that in the long run, that really wasn't so important. The effects of the internet were different than just that. So I suspect it's going to be a little while before we figure out what were the interesting parts of how students are going to use AI. But yes, I think absolutely working with it is critical.
So I have to imagine, with your background and what you are an expert in, you, I'm going to assume, are more on the excited side of what AI could bring and how it can be incorporated in learning and teaching versus buying into the scariness of it.
Well, sadly, it's a little of both.
Is yes, it a little both?
I'm excited. I'm also a little skeptical. I'm skeptical for a couple of reasons. One is because there really are some important problems that AI is producing, and by that I don't mean like that we're going to have new AI overlords. I suppose that's a possibility, but I actually think that discussion, those sort of gloom and doom discussions, are blinding us to the more immediate issues. Which are things like the fact that AI spews misinformation all the time, yeah, and that it can be used to create things online that are going to, you know, be spamming people or phishing for information, other things. AI is also, like, it has well-known biases. And once you start to use something with biases without actually really focusing on where they came from, how we regulate what material AI uses to train itself, and so on, like that's a huge problem. And not to mention the amount of power that's being used to run AI machines is enormous. The environmental impact is huge. And so we actually also have to think about just the cost benefit trade-offs. I mean, how much energy are we willing to spend to have AI do something for us that probably isn't that much better than we could have done ourselves?
Than we can do ourselves.
So they're real immediate problems. The other thing is, you know, when the internet first came out, people were very excited. This is going to democratize information. It's going to give voice to the voiceless. It will allow people who are geographically distributed and isolated to find like-minded communities. And it turns out, well, what nobody really predicted that what social media was going to do was essentially empower Nazis to, you know, to organize well and to, you know, do all kinds of terrible things. We tend to be very bad about figuring out exactly what's going to come in the future of technology. And so I think, yes, I'm optimistic, but I'm also wary. And I think that's kind of how we should all approach this.
Well, it's fascinating. And I would love to have you back on again, Professor David Williamson Schaefer, to talk more about this, because I have a very thin surface level understanding of it. And so continuing to be able to tap into your knowledge as things progress, because it's developing fast, that's for sure. So thank you so much for spending time with us today. Professor Schaefer is the Sears Bascom Professor of Learning Analytics at UW-Madison. Thank you so much. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, you too.
Uh-oh, did a rock hit your windshield from that semi? Don't worry, Auto Glass Now offers fast, reliable, and convenient service. For a limited time only, Auto Glass Now is offering 50% off windshield replacement. Call your local Auto Glass Now today for full details.
Think you'd like working with us at Civic Media? We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin. If you have the right skills to join our team, let's talk. Civic Media is a proud equal opportunity employer committed to diversity and inclusion, along with the growth and development of all current and future employees. If you're interested or are part of an organization who wants to know more, go to our website, civicmedia.us, and click on the Careers tab.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here.
I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe and is the best way to protect that legacy.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Hey, son, how are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it.
When your kid can't find the language, find the lyrics. Start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ad Council and Pivotal Ventures.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Overcast skies this afternoon with daytime highs approaching 69. Winds out of the north, 8 to 15 miles an hour. Mainly clear tonight, lows level off around 49, highs level off around 72 tomorrow. Partly cloudy Sunday, with daytime highs approaching 75. 68, chance for scattered thunderstorms Monday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 61 degrees.
Your home of the Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings from 8 till 10 on The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM WAUK.
Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. Greg Bach is on the board, and calling in on the phone is Civic Media's own sports reporter, Mike Clemens. Mr. Clemens, how are you today?
Pretty good. We got a final practice up here in Green Bay, and then we head to Sweet Home Chicago for the weekend for a huge game, 325 at Soldier Field against the Packers and the Bears.
So the big question, we were talking to J.R. Radcliffe from Journal Sentinel yesterday, and the big question I have for you, Mike, is do you think the Bears will still suck this weekend?
Well, no, you know, they have that tradition. I think that this coach that they've got, Matt Eberflus, is the best hire they've had at coach in quite a while since Lovie Smith was there. I think he's a smart guy. Luke Getsky is his offensive coordinator. Luke was assistant coach here in Green Bay for many years. And Williams is their defensive coordinator. He was with Eberflus, and when the Colts had a really good defense there for a couple of years, and has also worked for the Lions and the Vikings. So he's very familiar with the division. So the last regime put all the chips on Mitch Trubisky at quarterback, and he stunk. And then that kind of put them in draft pick hell. So they are rebuilding. And they made a big move this year, Kristen. And last year you saw Justin Fields, who they spent a first-round pick on, just like the Packers did with the Bears. But he had, like, nobody to throw to. And so in the offseason, they made a trade with the Carolina Panthers for a good receiver named DJ Moore. And I think if Justin Fields can settle down and throw a safe pass over the middle or in the screens, DJ Moore is tough. Once he gets the ball in his hands, he's going to be hard to bring down. So they've got that weapon added now on offense.
All right. Well, that's the Bears. So we'll TBD with them. How are you feeling about the Packers? I mean, I think there's a lot of anticipation for this weekend after a couple preseason looks at Jordan Love. But also, is there any update on Watson and Dobbs of whether or not they're going to play?
Dobbs came out and was limited in practice yesterday. So Romeo Dobbs is Jordan Love's main go-to guy through practice and preseason games, his best receiver, most reliable receiver. And just about 2 weeks ago, just before the final preseason game against the Seahawks, They sat him, and we found out it was a hamstring. So he was able to get on the field limited yesterday. But we were shocked when we came in on Wednesday, now that now Christian Watson, his other top receiver, the two guys from last year that they're really kind of build the team on, he's dealing with a hamstring. I doubt if he'll be able to play. The first thought I had for some reason was kind of a flashback to a game that the Packers had when LaFleur had taken over, and Aaron Rodgers was short on receivers. So they used Aaron Jones and their other running back, Jamal Williams, as some receivers, and they scored touchdowns and had some big plays. So maybe he'll use Aaron Jones, you know, a lot. The other thing is that we've talked about in the locker room this week is the rivalry. And I understand there's a lot of 22, 23-year-olds that have, you know, like I said to you, hey, how about that Alabama-LSU rivalry? You know, you and I can't really, you know, relate to that because we don't live down there. But I thought, you know, there's got to be there something to it. Now, one thing about it is Justin Fields, the Bears quarterback, is actually pretty close friends with the Packers' new quarterback, Jordan Love. And we asked Jordan Love about that.
Yeah, no, me and Justin, we got the same agent, so we do a good amount of things just with our agent and with our agency getting together. But, no, I haven't talked to him at all this week. Probably talk to him, you know, after the game or maybe before. Yeah, no, I'm excited for it. It's always exciting to, you know, open the season, get the first game on rolling. But for an NFC opponent, you know, rivalry game, it'll be very exciting playing there in their stadium. So I'm sure it'll be a packed house. Everybody will be excited for week one and ready to put on a show.
Oh, the plot thickens.
Yeah. You know, a lot of guys have been asking the other players in the Packers locker room, it's Jordan Love. Is he going to get nervous, you know, on Sunday? And they go, no. I mean, all through training camp, Jaire Alexander and Rasul Douglas are two defensive backs, veterans. They were trash-talking Jordan every day, trying to see if they can get under his skin. And he doesn't rattle. He seems pretty calm and cool. So they've got that in their on their favor. And, you know, you played that clip coming out of the break of that famous play from a couple years ago. Aaron Rodgers scores a touchdown. And then, you know, he said not only the men but the women were flipping him off there in the south end zone. And he started with that, you know, I own you. What are you doing? I own you. And it's true. Matt LaFleur's never lost to the Bears yet. He's 8-0 against them. So I went to Darnell Savage Jr., who's their safety now. He's taken over the back end. And I said, it's got to be, even if you've never been to Chicago or you're not familiar with the Bears-Packers rivalry with this really young Packers team, you've got to pick up on it once on game day, right? And here's what I said to him.
On game day, when you walk into that stadium, aren't there signs?
Then it
kicks in and you say, oh.
Yeah, you feel it. I mean, and it's not even necessarily when you walk into the stadium. It's driving to the stadium. You know, it's in the bus. So you see all the people tailgating, that kind of thing. It's a good feeling, though, honestly. It's kind of like a us against the world kind of feeling, you know. And it feels good because it kind of brings us closer together because we know we all we got. You know, we in this big stadium by itself, essentially. Obviously, Packer fans travel very well. We hope to hear some Go Pack Go chants on Sunday. So, but yeah, it's just one of those things, man. It's a special, special, special thing. This Bears Packers kind of thing. So,
when you're down in the field and you get women in the stands flipping off Aaron Rodgers, that's an indication.
Yeah, absolutely. They like I said though, that's the thing about just these two organizations, you know, just the fan base behind them is so deep and so rooted and so strong, you know. It just goes back to time and time again, you know. So it just makes it all the more better.
All right, Mike, we got 30 seconds left, so we got to wrap it up. But I'm very excited to see this game. We'll have to have you back next week to let us know on-field reporting, what you think, how the game went. But we're so happy to have you there in person. So thanks for joining us today, Mike.
Thanks, Kristen. Appreciate it. Have a good weekend.
So you too. Go Packers. When we come back, Alex Brusen will be here, who is the board president of We Got This, a gardening program that is pretty cool. Stay tuned. This is As Goes Wisconsin. The board president of
Waukesha, home of Les Paul, our awesome farmers market, and The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
CBS News Brief. A final report shows a Georgia grand jury recommended charges against a total of 39 people in the election tampering case that led to the indictments of former President Trump and 18 others. Legal contributor Jessica Levinson.
What we've seen is that the district attorney did not decide to charge all of the people and all of the crimes that were recommended by the grand jury here.
Among those not charged, Senator Lindsey Graham. A Category 5 Hurricane Lee swirling in the Atlantic could become one of the most powerful to ever form. Odyssey meteorologist Craig Allen.
Any effects for the United States would not be until the mid or latter portion of next week.
President Biden and other world leaders are at the G7 summit in India. So is CBS's Ed O'Keefe.
China's Xi Jinping and Russian President Vladimir Putin both saying they won't be making the meetings. The G20 is an economic organization, so there's less conversation about war and peace and much more focus on issues of dollars and cents.
CBS News Brief. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.
Your home for local news, weather, and sports across the airwaves and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. Scaffolding is keeping a Milwaukee apartment building from collapsing, so city government has forced everyone out. The Department of Neighborhood Services has evacuated all 16 units of the Sohi Lofts at 27th and Wells due to serious structural concerns. Over a dozen residents have been displaced. There are problems with exterior walkways, rusty scaffolding, falling stairs, and a non-functioning elevator. The big gig grounds are set to host some little gigs. Starting today, a family and pet-friendly temporary beer garden is scheduled to open at Milwaukee's Summerfest grounds. The garden will be located in the Northwestern Mutual Community Park and will be operational on select Fridays and Saturdays in September. There will be free parking, live acoustic music, and a diverse menu of beer and snacks. With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles.
Experience Nightlight, September 8th and 9th from 5 until 10:30 p.m. Presented by Joy Engine. The dazzling spectacle is an immersive 4D light festival taking place in Milwaukee's historic Mitchell Street neighborhood. Digital animations, dance, music, art, and fashion combine to create a visual, family-friendly sensory experience outside of 710 West Historic Mitchell Street, home of Mitchell Street Arts. The event is family-friendly and free to the public. Don't miss this iconic event. Nightlight, where art comes to life. Information at joyengine.org.
Wisconsin traditions have been built for years around the Badgers, game day, and the mascot. But lead miners are the original Badgers in the state, not the animal or the mascot. It was the 1820s, and the miners often didn't have shelter in the winters, so they lived like Badgers by digging tunnels into the hillsides to stay warm and sleep where they worked. It led to the reason why today you really can't think of Wisconsin without thinking Badgers. For Civic Media, I'm Terry Barr.
US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the lingo.
Jelly. Jelly adjective. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Wisconsin. I'm Kristen Bry. He is Greg Bach. And earlier this week, we got to talk to my colleague, James Causey, who's a veteran journalist and editorial columnist over at Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And we were talking about his article from last month, talking about how leaders in Milwaukee should probably listen to teenagers and listen to kids as far as some of their solutions to the problems that plague them. And one of the things he listed was programming, things that keep kids busy, mentors, things like, and so one of the, and actually one of the programs he mentioned is called We Got This, which is a gardening program that's been around for about 10 years in Milwaukee. And we just so happened, that was not planned when he mentioned it when he was on the show, but we had already scheduled the president of the board of We Got This, Alex Bruzan, to be on the show. And here he is. Alex, nice to meet you.
Yeah, good to meet you guys. Good timing.
Good timing, right? And yeah, so right? I think I had learned about you guys because I think earlier, like last month, maybe it was CBS 58 did a piece on you guys. And so without, because you're the expert, so tell us more about what We Got This is.
Yeah, sure. So We Got This was started about, like you said, about 10, 12 years ago by a man named Andre Lee Ellis. And he's famous in Milwaukee, a great community activist. And really what happened was, and a little bit of a backstory about my wife and I, we live around the corner from the We Got This garden.
Okay.
And so one night, it was like a Thursday night, I want to say about 5 o'clock, we heard gunshots kind of back behind the house. Andre at the time had been living just a few houses down, and heard those gunshots, and, a young man lost his life that night. Right around dinner time. And, you know, that's pretty normal for our neighborhood. That happened. In fact, same thing happened literally last night, about 9:30. My wife and I are brushing our teeth and same thing happened. That guy, who was a 17-year-old kid, he's going to make it. But, okay. You know, gun violence is a real thing, you know, over by us. It happens a lot. And so, you know, Andre knew that. And, he said, you know, we got to do something about it. And our zip code 53206 has 800 vacant lots currently in it. And so one of those vacant lots is what is now the We Got This community garden. And so he started that garden program, again, like I said, about 12 years ago. And just like any organization, you know, there's a start, but everything kind of has a rolling start. And so we call it 12 years ago. But essentially he built out that garden space and had kids from the neighborhood kind of just walking by and asking to help. And he had the great idea. Well, why don't we pay him? And so, you know, like I said, we're in our like 12th season of paying kids to work in the neighborhood, essentially. So Saturdays in the summertime, this past summer, We Got This had 12 Saturdays where kids could come out. They learned how to garden. They learned how to just kind of take care of the space. All of the plants and most of the building material was donated through a couple other organizations in the area. And so those kids planted, you know, hundreds of plants that were donated. Wow. They maintained all of those plants. And then now, towards the end of the summer, they harvest and then they take them home or give them to the neighborhood.
So I think that's a really important thing to highlight is the fact that, do you feel like part of the reason why this program, because part of the CBS 58 article was that it's so popular that there's actually not even enough work for all the kids who want to be part of it right now, right?
Yeah. So, you know, I like having good problems. I don't have any issue with having good problems. We have a good problem. So the last Saturday of the summer, 106 kids showed up, which meant that, you know, We Got This gave out $2,000 to kids in the neighborhood, you know, for working. We eclipsed 3,000 hours of service to the community with that group of people, you know, kids and even more with the adults. We don't really count that. And 175 different kids had come out over the summer. We've started to build out an additional space kind of down the street. This is super local geographic information, but we live on 8th Street, and on 9th Street was 3 or 4 contiguous lots that we have a lot of problems in our neighborhood with people dumping trash. And so frequently people would dump on those lots. And so when we started to realize we're running out of space here, we worked with the city to be able to manage those spaces. So we built planter boxes. There's a pumpkin patch, which I think is just really cool to have a pumpkin patch in the inner city, and a bunch of sunflowers. And we tried out corn this year. So there's a couple rows of corn.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And did that change of just activating the space? Did the community kind of figure it out? Like, oh, we can't dump garbage in here anymore.
Yeah. Well, there's you know, 800 vacant lots, there's a lot of places that you can dump trash. And so this is now just one less space. I'm sure it gets dumped somewhere else, unfortunately. But yeah, I mean, nobody wants to dump their garbage at a garden. Why would nobody wants to do that?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so, so with that though, so there's so many kids who want to be involved, and is it kind of just, there's not official enrollment. It's kind of, if you show up, there's work for you to do.
Yeah, we didn't turn anybody away this year. And so, you know, we had kids 8, 9, 10, all the way up through 18, a couple of kids that just graduated high school. And no, I mean, I don't know. I don't know about you, Kristen, but like a young person that wants to show up and work on a Saturday morning at 8 o'clock, I'm fine with that. We can figure out, we got this, can figure out whatever else we need to do, you know, raise the funds or, by the way, we got this mke.com. I just want to make sure I plug that if you're a listener and you want to donate. But yeah, like that's the easy part. I mean, I've lived in the inner city for the last 17 years, and I believe that there's a stigma around our neighborhood and neighborhoods like ours that people don't want to work. And I just have found that to be entirely not true. I mean, kids are literally getting up early on a Saturday, on a day that they could sleep in, to work. And we work, you know, we don't just sit around and hold hands and play games. We, you know, they're digging holes, we're planting trees, we're tilling up stuff, we're carrying heavy things, we're mowing neighbors' lawns. You know, we're doing all of that kind of yard maintenance type stuff. And they're excited, and they keep coming.
And so I think that's such an important thing to point out though, is that the fact that I think, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, a key part of this and the key part of the success is that you are paying them, and that it's not just a volunteer program, that it's like, it keeps, I would imagine it keeps them coming back. Cause if it's kids who they're certainly not necessarily getting allowance money. And so it does, there's a work ethic, there's a return on my time. There's a return, like there's a work, like all that gets built into it. Cause I think sometimes you'd think, well, this is gardening, this is supposed to be volunteer hours, but it probably, I would imagine, is a big part of it is the fact that they walk away after 4 hours with $20.
Yeah, Kristen, I had a neighbor growing up named Mrs. Gallagher, and she was an old lady that couldn't cut her grass. She had a couple of knee replacements, and so she couldn't cut her grass, right? And so I knew when I was 12, okay, I can go over to Mrs. Gallagher's and I can cut her grass, and she's going to hand me $10. And so like that was my first job. That was the first thing that I did. And so, I mean, yeah, like we opened the garden up last weekend and we had 35 kids show up just to volunteer. But there is something really valuable about putting dollars into a kid's hand, and then they get to decide what they do with it. Whether it's go to the corner store right after and buy a bag of chips, which actually surprisingly doesn't happen very often. Mm-hmm. A lot of the times they say like, I'm saving up for clothes for school, or there's a pair of shoes that I want to buy, and it's nothing ridiculous. It's like, I got a $40 pair of shoes I want to buy for the first day of school. Like, okay, well that's great. And, you know, and now you have an opportunity to do that, and nobody just handed it to you. Cause like I said, I mean, those kids, they work hard.
Yeah, absolutely. And is there something specific with gardening that you think is it because of, I've talked about this in the show for a month. This is my first year gardening as a homeowner. And so okay. I've had, my mom has been teaching me the craft, and it does there. It's meditative, but it also is when you're getting over there and you're weeding and it's hard work. And so you think there's something specific to the work of gardening that is also key to why the kids enjoy it. This has got to work that they get out of their own head. Is there something therapeutic about it?
Yeah, it's that. But then I worked in schools for a long time. And I know, I mean, a couple of things, like you have to keep kids busy in order for all hell not to break loose. So you have to keep them busy. But that being said, like you have to give kids something that they can do that's accessible. Like I taught math for forever. And if you give a kid a ridiculously hard math problem, they're going to sit there and then they're going to find a way to do something that they shouldn't do. But gardening has access points from, I mean, what you're finding out, somebody has no experience up to, you know, the 75-year-old lady that comes and volunteers who has 50 years of experience. Yeah. And so, you know, it's easily accessible for a kid. Everybody can carry a watering can. Everybody can say, that's a weed, that's a strawberry plant. You know, those are the types of things that make it easy. But then, you know, there's a lot of other, you know, really positive aspects to gardening. You see the literal fruits of your labor, or the vegetables of your labor. You see that like right away. Like you can plant flowers on the first Saturday in June, And then you can pick those flowers in August and then give them to your mom. So you have like this connection to the space. I don't have the statistic in front of me, and I wish I did, but I think the home ownership rate in our zip code is like 33%. It's about that. And so there's a real lack of ownership in our neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And those kids own that space. They take care of that space. And so when you can give a young person this idea that, you know, ownership is well within the possibilities for you, and in fact, here's a space that you own and manage, that does a lot to a kid, and they thrive off of that.
Absolutely. We're talking to Alex Bruzan, who is the board president of We Got This, which is a program in Milwaukee dedicated to having young people work in a community garden. And so I guess that's going back. So is it mostly vegetables I heard sunflowers, I heard corn, I heard strawberries. So what is the range of things being grown?
Yeah, and my wife is the gardening. I actually can't tell the difference between weeds and strawberries, but many of the 9-year-olds can. We've got some great partnerships already. In Waukesha, the city of Waukesha, there's a Walmart that's kind of partnered with us, and they gave us two literal giant. I'm holding my hands up. Listeners can't see, but I don't know, 2x4x3 boxes of seeds. And so we literally can plant, you know, we had everything. So like I said, yeah, pumpkins, a lot of vegetables, a lot of tomatoes, a lot of cucumbers, a lot of things that are easy to grow, but then several boxes that are dedicated to flowers that, you know, we can cut. And, you know, there's the one of the reasons behind that too is, I mean, 5-3-206, the median household income is $24,000 a year, and it's really hard to live on $2,000. Yeah. And so if you can produce anything that's going to create margin, that matters. Any little bit that you can do. So if a kid walks home with, you know, the equivalent of a grocery bag full of vegetables, like that matters. That makes, yeah, that can and does make a difference.
So I guess kind of going back to the conversation we had with James earlier this week, as someone who sounds like has spent your career working with youth and working with, yeah, kids and working in the inner city. What do you think that our officials and our leaders should be listening and actually taking into account from what you hear from young people?
Yeah, I think I'm big into design thinking. So in the long scope or in the 5-10 year plan that we got this, we'd love to have many other gardens because I think that model is repeatable and it's fairly efficient financially. But I think it's the themes that you're going to hear from the kids. They want purpose. They want pride. They want that sense of ownership. They want a place where they can go and feel like they're a part of something. We had spaces in my neighborhood growing up. My wife's from Middleton, Wisconsin. I'm from a town called Lake in the Hills. We had places that we could go, and those places don't exist in my neighborhood. Yeah. They just don't. And so we need things like that. It doesn't need to be 30 We Got This gardens. That would be great. But we need, you know, other places where a kid can go, where they can feel like they belong, where they can get a sense of purpose, a sense of pride, learn, learn some skills, learn how to resolve conflicts. That was huge. As you start to get up close to 100 kids, you're going to have conflict. Yeah. And you need some safe spaces to learn how to manage conflict.
All right. Well, tell everyone where they can find more information, but more importantly, donate.
Yeah, sure. Two things. You can go to WeGotThisMKE.com or Facebook, WeGotThisMKE. Also, my wife and I do a podcast. It's called the 5-3-206 Cast, where we kind of like talk about all things inner city, but specifically about We Got This. Several episodes are just about that. So 5-3-206 Cast, and get on Spotify and get it on wherever you get your podcast.
Perfect. We will link all of that to our show notes today. Alex Bruzan, so nice to meet you.
Have a great weekend. Great.
And this is awesome. It's such a great program. So thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Greg. Thanks, Kristen. Appreciate it.
All right. We have one more segment, so stay tuned. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Experience Nightlight, September 8th and 9th from 5 until 10:30 p.m. Presented by Joy Engine. The dazzling spectacle is an immersive 4D light festival taking place in Milwaukee's historic Mitchell Street neighborhood. Digital animations, dance, music, art, and fashion combine to create a visual, family-friendly sensory experience outside of 710 West Historic Mitchell Street, home of Mitchell Street Arts. The event is family-friendly and free to the public. Don't miss this iconic event. Nightlight, where art comes to life. Information at joyengine.com.
When you're high, you feel different. You think different, you talk different, you draw different, you listen to music different, but you probably knew that. Problem is, you also drive different, and not in a good way. That's why driving high is illegal everywhere. So if you're high, just don't drive. Make a plan to get a sober ride. Because if you feel different, you drive different. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Don't let biased algorithms, or degree screens, or exclusive professional networks, or stereotypes. Don't let anything keep you from discovering the half of the workforce who are stars. Workers skilled through alternative routes rather than a bachelor's degree. It's time to tear the paper ceiling and see the stars beyond it. Find out how you can make stars part of your talent strategy at tearthepaperceiling.org. Brought to you by Opportunity at Work and the Ad Council.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Overcast this afternoon with a high of 69. Winds out of the north, 5 to 10 miles an hour. Lows level off around 49 tonight, mainly clear. Daytime highs approaching 72 tomorrow. Bright sunshine expected. Mid-70s Sunday, much cooler Monday, with highs in the upper 60s and storms. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 61 degrees.
Whether you're heading down Les Paul Parkway or fighting traffic on the interstates, this is The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. He is Greg Bach. And Greg Bach, it's been so fun to have you on the board with me for the last 2.5 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh. Jane will be back on Monday, but oh then gosh. you will be back on the board as of September 25th when Jane takes over for me as I take care of baby. So how are you feeling? What have you learned over the last 2.5 weeks?
I have learned to being dead serious, like when I sit, if you're watching the live stream, you can see where I'm sitting. Sit at the board, have almost like a 180 visual of everything I'm doing, and keep calm the entire time. So like,
all right,
on my left, there's the phone line. In front of me, I got you, I got the board, I got music, callers. On my right, I got text messages, and making sure that, and always keeping my eye on the clock.
Very important.
And so, clock. So like the first couple of days, there were days where we had like big engagement, and I'm like, oh my God. And it's just like, and then I'm like, that's not going to do well. Relax, have fun. I got you next to me, so this is great.
It is great.
We're just being the ball. Just be the ball, man.
Be water, as Bruce Lee used to say.
Oh, even better. Be
water.
Hydrate, well, people.
I am a bum, so I'm out of town this weekend. I'm going, like I said, going up to Wisconsin Rapids. But we've been playing ads for this. I've heard on the commercials, but this sounds awesome. So Joy Engine is doing Milwaukee's first ever outdoor immersive arts and light festival experience. And so it's tonight from 5 until 10:30. It's also tomorrow from 5 until 10:30 on 7th and Historic Mitchell Street in Milwaukee. And it's basically like, it sounds like there's like, it's like 4D projection mapping. I don't even know what 4D is, but it's like mapping technology to Milwaukee's like the historic. So if you haven't been in Milwaukee, but like the historic Mitchell Street neighborhood is, I think there was like a big shopping neighborhood, and it's beautiful down there, but it's a multi-story building at 710 West Historic Mitchell Street, home of Mitchell Street Arts. And so that's going to serve as the backdrop for the show. But it sounds, I'm going to post more of this to our show notes today, but it's basically like performances and celebrating like technology and music. And it sounds really cool. And the lineups of the different artists sounds awesome. So I would say if you are in the Milwaukee area this weekend,
yeah,
check it out either tonight or tomorrow night. I know you're going to be busy as well because you have shows.
I do have shows this weekend. And I think they also made sure to say in the commercial that it's family friendly.
Yes.
Everyone can go. So I'm actually going to suggest it to my friends and my niece and nephew to go.
So, yeah, because there's some of the activities include there's a life-sized Light Bright, which sounds awesome.
Wait, what time is this happening? I'm going.
So basically, like, and I'm seeing some of the pictures, and, you know, like, Light Bright was just a little panel when you had it as a kid. But at least the pictures they have, like, it is massive. It is a big board that you can go create designs on.
That's so
and
cool.
Then PNC Bank has a kids area that's going to be like multilingual learning. And there's like a variety of different hands-on activities over there. And then in Mitchell Street Arts, you're going to be able to go into the building and explore their headquarters. And there's going to be art activities and tours of the space. So this sounds like, I'm really sad that I'm missing this. And so I hope people go and let me know how it is.
Hopefully, you know what? They'll do it next year and you can hold the hand of your little kid and they can run around. And
will they be running around? I guess in a year. At a year they should start walking.
They should.
Hopefully.
They usually, I mean, most kids that I know are walking around 8-9 months.
Really?
I think so.
Is it that early?
I thought so.
I thought they're like crawling at 8-9 months. I have no idea when the milestones are supposed to be.
Please direct all text messages to Luke Mather at Civic Media.
Luke definitely knows the child development stages.
Yeah.
If there's anyone at this company that knows it's totally Luke.
because I remember my niece Molly walking and talking at almost at the same time. She started talking real young and then you just shut her up. But like, yeah. So I remember her like starting to say words before a year, like little words, tiny words.
Interesting.
But she was walking. I
actually had a funny where our niece, Maddie, who's 6 years old, I guess her feedback from her teacher in her first week of school was to her mom said, boy, she can talk a lot. And I took offense to that because my sister-in-law put that in our family text and she said that was the feedback. And I immediately shot back as someone who was also told I talk too much in class. I was like, well, for what it's worth, I also was given that feedback as a child and now I get paid to talk for a living. So maybe it's not such a bad thing. Let her talk.
And that was a 45-second answer right there. It's really weird off the topic. Speaking of like reports, I was going through my car and just found a bag of shreddables. And in those shreddables, all my high school report cards.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know how it just didn't happen, but I looked at it. And I'm like, should I keep them? And then I saw like the D in science. I'm like, nope, they're gone. They're gone.
Oh, you got a D in science?
Yeah, I wasn't a good student in the first 2 years of my high school career.
I feel like there's a lot to dig into there with less than 3 minutes left for the show.
Yeah.
But was it because you didn't apply yourself or because you didn't care? Like, what do you, looking back at it?
I cared. I just didn't. I didn't apply myself correctly.
Interesting.
And to this, I mean, I think very much education is a custom made thing. You got to figure out how you learn and then you learn. You know, I grew up and we still do grow up in the time of take information in, memorize it, regurgitate it. Take it, memorize it, regurgitate. That's not how everybody learns. So it was hard for me to do that. So, you know, don't have learning disabilities or anything like that, no dyslexia or anything like that, but it is difficult for me to like read technical information and take the information in.
It's always interesting to like aptitude for like math and science versus language and social studies. I was certainly a language and social studies kid, but I feel like, is that just the missing piece sometimes for kids? Is it, it's that you maybe have a stronger inclination for one or the other, but if it's like just having the right teacher who helps you learn how to do the other thing, like how much of like exactly what you said, it's like, it's not that I can't learn this. It's just, I'm not like absorbing it in the way that you want me to.
I remember, honestly, I'll dig into this and we can talk about it further, but I feel like I remember seeing an article saying, stop saying you're bad at math. Because people say that all the time, like, I'm bad at math. Well, you're not. You just didn't learn correctly how to do math for you. And so, yeah, I'd love to. I could talk about that and find a guest and do the whole, like, I love that topic. So.
All right, add it to the repository of future topics.
Yep.
Greg Bach. All right, well, Greg, this has been so fun doing this show with you for 2.5 weeks. We're so excited to have Jane back on Monday. I will not be here Monday. Joseph Pecky is filling in, so always a joy to have Joe's insight. Maybe he will have an impeachment update, and I'm sure Joe will have lots of opinions on that. But thank you to Alex Bruzan. Thank you to Professor Schaefer. Thank you to Luke Mathers. Thank you, Greg Bach. Thank you to everyone who filled, texted in, called in.
was a great show. Great
Friday. It was very fun. Very popping, effervescent.
All right. Have a great weekend, everyone. We'll see you next week. Bye. This has been As Goes Wisconsin.
Hey, this is Matt from Design Garden. Remember when the internet was new? Back then, you had to leave your house to start a business. Companies used to pay programmers bags of cash to get online. Now, small businesses can get online with a Facebook business page, or Squarespace, or Google My Business, or WordPress. But which tools should you use? Can you afford to go down the wrong path? Design Garden uses modern tools to build your website the right way. Find us online at design.garden. Again, that's design.garden.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow, Wisconsin's home for daily conversations about the state's latest headlines and stories. Weekday mornings from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. You're listening to The Shaw. WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.